Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
I'm ready to turn it over to Duncan Larson for Cane Travel.
Thank you, Judy. Good morning, everybody. I'm so happy to be with you again. Today
we might before you do it, we might remind everybody to please mute until it's your turn to speak or you want to speak.
That's a great reminder. Today we are going to talk about outdoor travel and different things to think about when traveling outdoors. And along with me is Winfred Haynes. He is an orientation and mobility instructor at the Chris Cole Center in Texas. So thank you so much, Winfred, for joining us and presenting on this subject. And I'll let you go ahead.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be here. This is probably my, fourth or fifth year or something like that, helping out with this retreat. And it's always been really fun for me, and I really enjoy it since teaching orientation mobility is a passion of mine. I've been working in the field of blindness for almost 50 years, I guess. I worked in New Mexico at the Center for the Blind for 26 years, and I've been here now going on 25 years. So I taught physical education in Alamogordo and O&M, and since I've been here in Austin, I've just been teaching orientation and mobility. So been doing that for quite a while. So with outdoor travel, one of the things when we do when we're teaching outdoor travel, with the beginning students, wherever you are, it depends on your area, but we start out with kind of doing like we do basic cane travel in the building, working with the open palm and, listening for the hallways opening up and things like that. So then we take that same thing outside and get the students working with their canes, listening to the tap on the sidewalk and listening for the echoes off of buildings, and getting used to making sure that their cane tip, the arc, is low so that they, can catch drop-offs when you come to the curbs and stuff. It's rare now here in Austin that we find curb drop-offs. Just about every intersection in the city now has ramps. So we have to go travel by car or someplace to find places where we have to look for curbs and stuff. But overall, again, it's really the same thing, making sure that the cane hand is loose, relaxed, so that when you come to a curb, the tip of that cane will drop off the curb and you'll hear it click. And that lets you know that you're about a step or two from that curb. And one of the things that we do, we really concentrate on using the cardinal directions. So when I'm teaching it, we get out here on one of the streets that is a north-south street in front of our center, and it's Sunshine Drive. And when I work with the students on the cardinal directions, I usually have them, whether we're in the building or outside, face north. And I kind of use a compass, a clock, clock positioning, explaining to them where the cardinal directions are. When you ask people, do you know the compass directions, and what are the, they will usually say north, south, east, west. And they usually do it in that order. What I explain to my students is, rather than doing it like that, I said, because you don't go from 12 to 6 and 3 to 9 in time. You go in a circle clockwise, 1, you know, 12 to 3 to 6 to 9. So I explained to them, north is similar to your 12 o'clock. The letter, the block letter E is similar to 3. So I use 3 east, 6 south, because they start with the same letter. And there's a fancy, I didn't realize it was a clothing store, shoe store called 9 West. So I will tell my students, you need really good shoes for orientation mobility. So you want to go to 9 West to get your shoes. That's kind of how I, that's how I explain it. And when they're facing west, I will say, okay, can you tell me where east is? And it's like, well, to my right's north, behind me is east. So I do that quite a bit with the students. And so I explain now with your parallel street, if you're facing north, where we are now, is running north and south, and your cross street, perpendicular street, is east, east, west. One of the things that helps here in Austin in particular is that, again, with the compass directions and things like that, our numbered streets in the north part of Austin, the numbered streets all run east-west. And our address is at 4800 North Lamar. If you go south, the numbers go get lower. So we'll tell the students, the numbers get smaller going south, and they get larger going north. So those are a couple of things that I use for helping with teaching the cardinal directions. And knowing if you're on a numbered street, you'll either be walking east or you're going to be walking west. Other things to help with the cardinal directions is, you know, again, I'll tell them the sun comes up in the morning. I usually ask them, where does it come up? And you know, some people are not sure, so they may say west. But I'll say, okay, no, it's in the east. And the progression of the sun is it's not like a straight over rainbow directly. But it doesn't go directly east over top of your head to west. It goes a little bit tilted, so it's going east towards the south a little bit. So by noon, 1 o'clock-ish, it's in the southern part of the sky, and then it dips on over to the west part of the sky. So in combination, I will say, while we're out here traveling, or if you've gone into a building at a certain time of day and you come out and you're not sure what direction you're facing, you look at your watch and you figure out where the sun is, when there is sun, of course. And if it's like 1 o'clock and you feel the sun, on your left, that means that you're facing west and the sun is on the southern part of the sky. And so then you can determine where the rest of the compass directions are, if that makes sense. And near the end, you know, we can have you guys ask questions, stuff like that. So that's one of the biggest things I do at Compass Directions.
So can I add, I want to add something here.
Sure.
So when I teach people using cardinal directions, I try to tell them, get your direction when you're absolutely sure you know what direction you're facing. For the most part, for example, at the Colorado Center, when you leave the building, you're facing south. It's a little bit off, but facing south. So when you know that, then you know where your other directions are. We might want to talk a little bit about why. Why is this important even to know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. So a lot of the reasons that it's important to know those, the cardinal directions, is there's times when I know for sure that you'll know that you're going to have someone from out of town come visit you. And you know that they may come in from a certain city or whatever, but in the scheme of things, you may not know in orientation from where you are what direction they are coming into town to get to where you are. So you're saying, okay, you're going to come down. As you're coming down Lamar, when you get to such and such street, it's going to be on your left. And so it makes sense if you know that they're coming south, and they know that they're going south and it's going to be on their left when they get to that street. But if you're not sure, you make it really clear by saying, as you're traveling north on Lamar and you get to 45th Street, after you've crossed 45th Street, it will be on the east side of the street or the west side of the street. So it's giving them a clear idea that they're going to be traveling north on Lamar, and that clearly once they cross 45th Street, they're going to be needing to move over to the left side or to the west side of the street to find that business or your home and things like that. So it makes it really easier for someone to find you. It makes it easier for you to find a business that you are looking for when you are traveling in and going, you know, downtown or in a new city. It really helps with that kind of information.
Yeah.
So, and then other things that when we're working with the students, we teach them like the address system. So every city has their address system. And generally they have a dividing line from north and south and east west, and usually when you move away from the dividing line, the addresses get bigger as you move away from the dividing line. So if I'm going west 38th Street, then if I'm at, well, our dividing line is called Speedway. So our dividing line, I'm at that 100 block. The next block over, I'm at 200 block. And it just progresses from there. Once I go east on Speedway, it's the same thing. Or I'm sorry, 43rd, it's the same thing. East, the first block, second block, 1, 2, 300 block. So then you're knowing If you're in the 23rd 100 23rd Street, you're 23 blocks from that dividing street. Then using that, we also the 00 here in Austin, the even numbered addresses, they're on the west side of the street and the north side. And the odds, of course, are on the east and the south. So when we help our students know the streets are the even are on the north and west, we use the acronym NEW for north and the E for even and west. So north, even, west lets them know that that's how the addresses are.
Can I add something here?
Sure.
So, Winford's talking about Austin, and I've mentioned some things about the Colorado Center, but we want you to know that, you can take this information and use it anywhere, wherever you live. And so, if you're going to really work and look at the address system in your town, that is pretty easy information to get. When we're talking about an even numbered address, we're talking about the number that is the very last number in an address. For example, my address is 304 East Simpson. Well, in this case, we would look at the four, that it is the even number, and know. What side of the street it's going to be on. Having this information will save you a lot of time and effort, and you'll be able to travel to a business easily with it. So thank you, Winford. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and also with that information that Duncan was talking about also is that four also can tell you where that the house or the business is on that particular block, because the 00 is the beginning, 02 would be the second business, 04 would be the third business or house. And so you can look at it like that. And interesting enough, I lived in Alamogordo forever in New Mexico. And the address system, like Duncan says, you can take this anywhere and apply it. And in Alamogordo, it was the opposite. The even numbers were on the east and south side of the street, and the odd numbers were on the north and west side of the street.
This is Judy. Yeah,
And
Judy.
Go ahead.
I want to say that I don't that that what you have to learn is the way your city works,
Right.
because for
Yes.
instance, if something's 300, I've been in blocks where 304 is the second one because the space is wider between 300. There is no 302 in a particular block. So you can't count on knowing how many houses you are from the corner for sure.
Yeah, and it's going to vary from place to
Yeah.
place. The point here is this can be information for you to use as you travel in your own community. You don't have to understand address locations in order to travel independently, but it would be something helpful for you. So I know that we also want to talk about, sun cues. Using sun cues.
Right. And yeah, with
And
this,
you did to a certain extent, yeah.
yeah.
Cardinal
So
direction.
if you wanted to add to that, piece with the sun cues. But one of the things I tell my students, like, for example, I'm going to throw this together with crossing streets and using sun cues, for example.
Yeah, good.
When you are crossing a street and you're going west across the street, the northbound, north-south street, and let's say you have your sun, it's around your 1 o'clock class time. So the sun now, as you're going west, is going to be on your left-hand side. Now, let's say you're on the south side of the street, so the parallel street is on your right. So when I work with students at crossing, at like particularly at stop signs, and we have the 2, 3, and 4-way stop signs. When I have them working on that, many times that we've had students that come that have been in public schools and stuff, and they tend to cross at the stop signs when there is no traffic whatsoever. So they always go with all quiet, all clear. And I work with, what we do here is we teach them at some point in time somehow to use traffic every time. Some of the things that will happen is, again, you're standing on the corner to cross the cross street, and the parallel street's on your right. Sun's on your left. If you start walking across the street and there's no parallel traffic, if you're a person that happens to veer extremely to the right, so now you're going to end up at the diagonal corner from where you started. Now, because you've gotten up on that corner, you've now got the sun to your back, because you crossed diagonally and you've stepped up on the street, and now you have the street behind you. And so, okay, I crossed the street correctly. I still have the street on my right. If you're not aware of that sun cue that it's behind me instead of on my left, I veered the wrong direction. So I'm now not going the direction that I need to be going. So in combination, that's why when you have parallel traffic, as you start to make your street crossing, that parallel car will keep you going mostly straight. So then when you do get across the direction you're going, now you still have that sun on your left-hand side where it needs to be. So we use those sun cues, you know, quite a bit to help, you know, reorient yourself when you get turned around, or to stay oriented as you start getting ready to learn how to cross the streets and stuff. So those are really big pieces on, you know, learn how to cross the street.
Yeah, so I would tell my students, when you go to cross particularly a residential street where there's maybe not going to be traffic, pay attention to your sun the whole way across, so that you're not, like, if you're feeling the sun on the left side of your face, keep it there as you're crossing, to help you with orientation.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we talk about sun cues, you know, we're not talking about you being able to see the sun. We're talking about you feeling the sun on your body, on your face, on your, sometimes it's easier to feel if you're wearing dark clothing, to feel on a part of your body, your shoulder or whatever. So.
Yes. And, you know, feeling it on your head, feeling it on your face,
right.
You know, during the summertime when we're out there in this nice, delicious 100-degree weather, feeling the sun on your legs, whether it's on the front, back, or side. Those are the really good things about using the sun to help you with travel. And the sound cues when you're out traveling, you can sometime with the cane, as you're tapping it many times, you can hear the sound of the cane tip echoing off of a building. Like when you're getting closer to a building, you're approaching the entrance way, and when you're out away from the building, as you start approaching it, you can hear that echo coming back to you. As you're walking down the sidewalk and you're listening, as you're walking down, and there are parked cars to the left or right of you, you can actually also hear the not only the sometimes the echo of the cane kind of bouncing underneath the car and back to you, but some of the other sound things that you will hear is like if you're walking along and you've got three, four cars lined up, and there may be a bus passing on that parallel street. As it passes one car and gets to the space between the cars, you hear the engine disappear, appear, disappear, appear, disappear, because it's going past those parked cars. And so now you can, in theory, kind of count how many cars there are lined up there if you start picking up on where the it blocks and opens up and blocks and opens up, which again can be helpful in some cases when you're almost near the end of the block and the sound gets blocked. It might be because there's a car at the very corner that's blocking the sound of that vehicle. And then until you get all the way to the corner, can you then hear where the intersection has opened up? Some of the places I like to work is like around our center. It has like a big wall on either side of a driveway. So some when I'm working with the students and they are looking for that particular driveway, they're familiar with the area, but they're not necessarily paying attention to that, the echo on that wall, or the way the sound of the car goes past it. I'll take them out there and stand there, and I'll let them listen. I'll say, "Tell me what you're hearing, where you hear it, describe it to me, and everything." And eventually, they'll hear that the car is echoing off of that wall. So I'll say, "Now, when you come from 7-Eleven in the evening, and you're not sure where this turn is, as the traffic passes by you, you will hear this echo on both sides of the driveway. That so now you're going to know that this is the driveway that you need to turn into, because it's the only driveway on that stretch of Lamar to get back to the center." And you start building these pieces of echo and stuff like that in your neighborhood. Somebody down the street, their lawn's smooth, and two houses down, as you're walking around down the street to the corner, the person has hedges up. So now you can feel and sense that those hedges are there, and then you have an idea. Okay, now, but I'm two houses down from the corner, so it's a lot of the things like that we use the echolocating and sound cues with. So you want to add anything, Duncan?
Well, just and some of the things that Winford's talking about aren't necessarily going to be sound cues. I would call some of them landmarks, such as, okay, there's some hedges, and that is my neighbor's house. So mine is next to it. Those kinds of things you can really pay attention to in your own neighborhood and know, your environment so that you can stay oriented and travel successfully in your neighborhood.
And then again, some of the sound cues might be as you're walking along, there might be the street lamps in your neighborhood. One of them, for some reason, may be buzzing a lot louder than the rest of them. So then that also gives you that sound cue of that familiarity of your area. As you're walking along, some places have the like a big manhole cover, and you'll hit that metal plate on that manhole cover. So now you again have an idea of where you are in your neighborhood. That's one of the ways I used to find one of my friends that lived like 6/10 of a mile from me. I get on the sidewalk across the street from them, and as I was walking down the sidewalk, I would there were two manhole covers that were within 5, 6 feet of each other. When I hit the first one, then I knew once I hit the second one, then I could find that driveway and then cross the street, and I'd be in front of their house. So that was one of the things that I would use. And if I came from another direction and I hit that first manhole cover, then I knew I just had to turn right and cross the street to get over to my friend's house. And you develop these things by getting out and actually doing it.
This is
So,
Judy.
Yeah,
yes.
Judy. Is that by any chance jaywalking? You're crossing in the middle of the block.
But actually it is jaywalking.
You're busted.
That's yeah. Interesting story.
So I'm just going to go on record here and say, if it's a typical thing where a lot of people jaywalk, just because you're blind doesn't mean that you can't do that. But you do really have to listen for traffic. I don't
Yes.
want anybody to be out traveling around and be in a dangerous situation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Years ago, there was a student here, and one of our instructors was working with her, and she always heard the word jaywalking. She always heard about jaywalking. And she was continually blind, and she had no idea at all what that meant. So she knew where the crosswalk was to get across our street here on Sunshine. And she would have to go across and then make a ride to get to the bus stop and things like that. So her instructor says, okay, here, we're going to go out here and I'm going to show you, explain to you what jaywalking is. So he took her kind of close to where the bus stop is that's across from the one that she would normally go to go south. And he said, so you're at this bus stop and you know where the other one is on the other side. She said, yes. He said, so here, it's the same thing at the crosswalk. You still have to listen for traffic. You still got to make sure that it's clear when you cross. But now I want you to cross from this bus stop to the bus stop on the other side of the street. And she said, well, but that's not safe. He said, well, as long as you're listening to the traffic, just like you do at that crosswalk back there. So she did, and she crossed over. He said, that is what jaywalking is. So,
You got to be really aware of the situation.
yes, yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
only if there's very, very little traffic on it. So,
Yeah.
what I'd like to do is go over a little bit more about crossing a residential street, some of the things you want to pay attention to. I would, when I the first residential streets I worked on with students would usually be that we would walk along a sidewalk and come to a street in front of us and cross that street without having to change directions, because it's much easier to learn to cross residential streets like that before you start changing directions. Not that you can't, but that's a good place to start if some of you are brand new to travel. The thing that you want to do is really pay attention to the curb. I know Winford said they don't have a whole lot of curbs. They have mostly curb cuts or ramps at their corners. That might be the case for a lot of you, but in our area here in Colorado, mostly there are some curbs. And so you want to find that curb. And I'm going to tell you this, and I want you to, if you don't remember anything else today, remember this. Don't line up with the shape of the curb with your feet. I know people kind of want to do that, but if you do that, it's going to take you catty-cornered across the street. You're going to end up crossing two streets at once. So just come up to your street that you're going to cross. Pay attention to any traffic, both in front of you, making sure that it's safe to cross. Any parallel traffic, you can cross when parallel traffic is going. And pay attention to your sun, and you'll make a great crossing. So I don't know, Winford, do you have things you want to add to that?
Yes, that's also like what I like to do too, is you know, have them go directly wherever the street you're going to have them cross. You want them to walk directly to that street in front of them and then make the street crossing. It's changed for us here. It used to be when you walked out of the residential door, you'd literally walk straight up to the intersection, and then you could line up and you would listen to your cross traffic. On your right would be a driveway. So all you had was the cross traffic, which is what we call uncontrolled because there's no stop sign or anything. Okay. So then you used to just walk up to the intersection and you would have you listen. And then again, when it's clear, cross, and also again, using the sun. And we really stress all the time the cardinal directions and the sun cues. I think we all stress that a lot, and it tends to annoy students sometimes, but you know what? It's our job. So, but what they've done now, our students now have to actually come up to the street and they'll hit a grass patch, and then they have to turn left and go about 5 or 10 feet and then find the ramp and then turn right to cross the street. We have no idea why the city did that, but nevertheless, the way what Duncan was saying, the way you would come up and line up. And the other thing that I explained to our students, off some of the ramps or curb cuts on either side, they have like a little curb. So the students will want to line up with that curb and then make their crossing. What I'm getting them to do is I want them to use their hearing to line up with the street crossing rather than any tactual information. Using tactual information can be good, but audio is better, because they tend to veer when they hit that curb, and they'll start following the curb, and then they'll go to the right. So like Duncan said, hang on for a second, if you guys please. Oh, okay. One of my our students just came in to check the room here.
Okay.
But yes, making sure that you don't line up with that curve because it's curved a little bit, and that makes you veer. And
Yeah.
also here in Austin, some of the ramps or curb cuts, they're what we call shared ramps. So they're kind of they'll both go both directions.
Right.
So again, you have to be very careful with making sure you line up
We
with
have
the
a hand
curve.
raised. Are you ready for questions?
I just
Yes,
want to
sure.
make one more comment
Very good.
Before the question.
You got it.
You when you are out and about traveling, be very aware. You know, you're going to be aware of your cane technique. Hopefully you're going to get that so that it's very natural and you don't have to think a whole lot about your cane technique, and be aware of your environment. But it's a really good thing to start when you come up to a street. Listen, how wide is that street? Is it two lane? Is it four lane? You know, we're going to talk a little more about that with crossing busy intersections tomorrow, but you can do that also with residential streets because sometimes they are wider than two lanes. Yeah. Okay, Patricia.
Yes, Patty, you have the floor.
Patty. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Boy, I'm so thankful, Duncan, you mentioned this business with don't line up with the curb when you cross. I have hearing aids, and we have our ramps are, I mean, everything is round. You get, there's no straight corner. And I have such a problem with how to line up, and I'm so afraid of veering. I know when I start to cross the street, I tend to, I know I head away from the intersection, which is not good. How do you, what are some exercises that, any suggestions on how to help with the veering problem? In other words, not only is my hearing and keeping all parts of my body going in the same direction, because I know if my feet, my hips, my shoulders, and my head ain't in the same direction, no matter what my cane does, I'm not going to get where I want to be. And I have a lot of problems with that.
So I would say, Patty, that for you, like we talked about using the sun. So if you're going to really work on this, my recommendation is for you to go out when it's really sunny and you can be very clear about where you're feeling the sun on your body. So you walk up to a street, you feel the sun, you keep the sun in the same part. So you're feeling it on the same part of your body all the way across the street.
Okay, because
that
I know,
would be very
I know
helpful.
I have a tendency to move my head to make sure I'm still hearing the traffic right, even with hearing aids. It's a terrible habit. It's a hard habit to break. And one other quick thing I wanted to mention, when you're talking about sun cues, and I absolutely agree. When I used to be out working, it confused me for the longest time if I was walking on the in the morning now, on the east side of a street, and I could feel the sun on my left, and I'd be walking and walking and thinking, why am I feeling all that? It feels like the sun's out on the right side of me too, but what if there are a lot of glass and steel buildings? They'll reflect the sun back to you. And until I sort of got that into my head, it's like, oh, no wonder I'm feeling it feels so weird sometimes. Do you understand what I mean?
I
How
do.
reflective light can also get into your mobility, whatever, psyche.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about that, but it definitely could. But I want to caution you about, okay, for this is for everybody on the call. When you use sun cues, you use them. I like to tell people, let's use them in a simple way. You're going to use it to help you get across the street. In, let's say you're facing south, you want to cross the street and you want to keep going south. You're going to keep that sun on the same part of your body. But remember that if you're out and about for a while, you're not going to feel the sun in 2 hours at the same place on your body.
Right.
So you have to keep checking it.
Oh, that's such a good reminder.
Yeah, keep checking.
Even though I know that in my head, because I know when I'm riding with my husband, I'm always saying, what direction are we going? And how come the sun feels like it's over there? I mean, I'm forever doing that. I think I drive him crazy. But yeah, that's such a good reminder.
Some of the things that you can do when you're riding like that is be aware of what direction you're turning. If you know that you start out from your house and you're going north, okay, just if you want to know which way you're going, just be, it's it can get kind of crazy, but be aware of what direction he makes his turn. So if you're going north and he turns left, you know you're going west. And so, you know, and trying to keep track of the sun when you're in the car that's too difficult. So
yeah, that's hard.
Here's a couple of recommendations. And this is something that I do with my students. When you do this and you want to work on this, you want to go, like if you want to use the parallel, go to a place that you know that you got fairly consistent parallel and an area you kind of know, right? But what I do with my students, and I will tell them, I'll say, if you put your hand out in front of your face, like you're making the sign stop, your middle finger lines up with your nose. Your pointer finger and ring finger line up with your eyes. Your thumb and your pinky line up with your ears. So your hand is like your face. So if I'm standing and I want to cross a perpendicular street, I can use my right hand. If the car's coming from my left, I can put my hand flat in across my body, point to the car coming towards me from my left, and I'm going to follow it with my hand as it goes past my body. As it goes past my body, then I can extend my arm and keep my fingers facing and following right behind where that car's going. If it feels like the car's coming into my left shoulder and out my right shoulder, I'm probably mostly lined up, but then I have to adjust my feet that way. That makes sense, under your shoulders. That's one way of doing it. If you're going with the parallel from behind you to in front of you, as you hear it coming up behind you, you just kind of follow it with your left hand, if it's on your left, and track it until your arm feels like it's coming to the center of your body in front of you. Okay, now, I've been working with a lady this morning that's wearing hearing aids, and we've been trying to work on her. She tends to veer left because her right ear is her better ear. So I notice when she starts walking, she turns her head a little bit to the left so that she kind of puts that right ear out in front of her. So one of the things that I've done in the past is when you stand at the intersection with the cane in right between your feet and the pencil grip. And then, so people do the, like the left, right, the flagging kind of thing where you get the car's attention that you're going to be starting to move. I do that. They call it flagging here. Well, I do a flagging, but it's very simple. It's my cane's directly between my feet. I extend it directly out in front of me with the tip barely over the ground. And I stick it right in front of me. So when it's standing straight up and down, and it moves out in front of you, the driver sees that cane is moving. That person is starting to move, possibly. Once you extend it, you walk about one or two steps and then start arcing it left and right. Because now you're following directly where you pointed that cane.
Mm-hmm.
But if you point it a little to the right, you're going to go to the right. If you point it a little to the left, you're going to go to the left. If when you start arcing it, your arc is way left or and not so much right, you're probably going to veer to the left. So mm-hmm. It's got to be all balanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I do it.
Okay.
Thank you, Winfred. We have someone, Anne-Marie Harris has a question. Marie.
Yeah, go ahead, Anne-Marie.
There you go.
Hi. Hi. Well, part of my question was just answered about veering. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, is veering just kind of your own natural thing and it doesn't go away? Or with practice, can you be less likely to veer? I tend to veer to the left.
I think...
Go ahead.
I think with practice, and I tend to be like with good technique and good open palm and balanced arc, you can fix the veering.
Okay.
So
and I also want to know, I'm sorry.
I just want to make another little comment about that. Make sure when you are using your cane that your hand is centered, because it really can, if your hand is off to one side or the other, it can create a situation where your arc is not even. If your arc isn't even, and you don't have anything else to go by, you don't have a sun cue and you don't have traffic, let's say you're in a parking lot. If your arc is wider to the left, you are going to veer left. That yeah. You're just going to follow the arc of your cane.
What my instructor is telling me is that my left foot is turned somewhat. Okay. And I'm not aware of it. I'm just not aware of it.
I think I would practice, Anne-Marie, with some kind of really consistent parallel, like parallel, you know that you've got consistent parallel traffic and you can walk along it, or even a sidewalk that has grass on both sides, you know?
Mm-hmm. Where,
yeah. I think you're going to
get I actually tend to do it more when I'm crossing than actually on a straight walk.
When you're crossing the street?
You know, let me just say that, especially with people who are beginning travelers, the natural tendency is to veer away from traffic. I mean, no matter, that is just what we subconsciously do.
Mm-hmm.
Preservation.
And so
you have to really think about, okay, is this the way I'm going? I'm going to pay attention to my sun. You won't always have a sun cue, but if you can practice with good parallel traffic, you know, it's a lot easier to travel around traffic than it is with no traffic around. Beginning student doesn't understand that, but because it seems scary, but it is easier. So.
Yeah, we tell our students traffic is your friend.
Yeah, right. It's really true.
I also wanted to know, do all people with sight loss get the echoing in doorways and things? Does it just take time for that to happen for you, or is that not something that everybody experiences?
That's a good question.
It's a good question. I would say that it depends on like, if so you know about it now, let's say, okay? So now at this point, start trying to be aware of it. Maybe stand somewhere, like in a, let's see. Well, just stand in some kind of a building, someplace where you can tap your cane and bam, bam, listen to that echo come back to you. Move away from the, a little bit further away, tap your cane and listen to that echo. So now you're getting that idea, okay, this is kind of what it would sound like, you know? The other thing is like, if you're walking along a building, and this is more like, what do you call this? It's like a feel. You're walking along a building, and then all of a sudden, it disappears, and then there's the sun, or it opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, but as you're walking along that building, you may hear that echo off of the building. But once your cane tip hits past that, before your body does, you're not going to hear that echo. And then you're going to feel what opened up.
Yeah. And if you're walking along a street that has some businesses that have overhangs or awnings, definitely pay attention to that, because you're going to hear that echo as you go underneath that.
Yes.
Sometimes that can be a really good indication of, oh, there's where the door is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both.
Yeah.
This is Brian.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, briefly, as far as teaching mobility, there's kind of two questions combined into one. Several big cities do not have actual squares as far as intersection. Some of them have 45 degree angles that come in to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 50 years ago, when I lived in Chicago, and they had sections on there, and that threw me off. And I was excited. And then the other one is, how do you handle roundabouts?
Okay. So those angled intersections, yes, we have them in Denver. They are in a lot of places. That is really advanced travel, doing that. And I don't really know how I would exactly explain that on the call. I've worked with people a number of times on crossing those kinds of intersections. I know it can be done. It's usually much more successful when a person has had other successful travel experiences where you've already crossed a regular lighted intersection. Usually, often those are going to be lighted intersections. And we will talk more, we're going to talk tomorrow about crossing lighted intersections. Winford, do you have some suggestions about roundabouts?
I think, yeah. So we have some here, but they're kind of small. But mm-hmm. I know that what I would do when I'm teaching them, because I'd not seen them before until I moved to Austin. And the first time I encountered it, it was like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah.
But it's the same, it's going to be the same thing, kind of like if the car comes into the intersection, when it's your parallel car, and you definitely want to, again, use your near parallel traffic. If it's coming in to make a turn to go across in front of you, it's going to slow down as it makes the corner, because it can't go necessarily faster on the corner. If it's going to come into the intersection and keep going in circle around the roundabout to keep going the direction that it's going, it's going to be a little bit further away from you, but it's going to be a steady flow. It's not going to start to slow down. And so at that point, it'll come in towards you a little bit. Once you hear it starting to arc away from you is when you start moving across that the street. So you're kind of somewhat trailing behind it. Hmm. But it's at the...
We are running out of time.
Yes.
Hour. I hate to leave us in the middle of a roundabout. That just doesn't seem...
We can talk about... I'm going to make a note. We'll talk about roundabouts tomorrow.
Okay. Well. All right. Okay. So don't anybody run away from home while you're in this roundabout.
Right.
Careful.
I want to thank you, Winford. It was so helpful to have you do this presentation. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I'll be in here tomorrow, too.
Okay.
Yeah, great. So, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, Winfred.
You bet.
All right. Thank you, Kane crew. We all lived through it. Nobody got run over. It was great.
That's right.
Yes. Thank you for spending your time with us today. We appreciate your participation. For more information, contact President Glenn Crosby at nfbseniors@gmail.com or call 443-681-9345. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.